Well, welcome everybody to the Iowa Total Care, Iowa Healthcare Association Managed Care call. Today's November 11th. And we'll start this one kind of how we do every other call with a quick rundown of the informational letters that have gone on or been published over this last month since we've had our last COVID or our last MCO call. So a couple I wanted to talk about here today was information letter 2179, and I will try to put these on the screen and see if my computer allows me to share them. Make sure that still reads. It looks like it does. So, Iowa's participation in the federal fiscal year 2021 PERM program. So what this is talking about is basically some audits that will be going on throughout the federal fiscal year 2021. That all providers, all Medicaid providers, would be subject to. It's a pretty lengthy, I mean, it's a lot of text, I guess, for the information letter, but I wanted to make sure that providers were aware that this existed and was going to be in effect for Iowa, as well as, I think, all states from this perspective for 2021. So, IL 2179 would be your reference for that one. We'll go back here quick. 2181 is the CMP grants for communicative technology during COVID-19. As a reminder, this grant was obviously open. I think it's between May and June of 2020. They reopened it again for providers to be able to submit an application for communication technology to be funded out of CMP grant dollars. So that window opened again. I can pull this one up as well. It opened again. Another lengthy one is from May 6th through June 30th before. And I think providers have until January 23rd, 2021 to continue to submit those applications again. So if you have not received grant money, you could submit that for a couple different devices, anything to help with communication with residents and family members during this time when visitation is more restricted than it has been in the past. Annual provider training, want to make sure we flag that for everybody. They are virtual this year. This will be with our managed care partners and the Iowa Medicaid Enterprise. Those meetings, as you can see on the calendar, is it given a date on there? Now that I look at it. Jeannie, what date are those? Do you know off the top of your hand?
Yeah, they are next week. I believe they are Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah. Is it just me, or am I not seeing the date within the informational letter?
You know, that I've gotten so many of them, I just knew when they were, Brennan. But no, you are correct. I believe that maybe.
Oh, there we go. Page
oh,
two.
It's so low. Okay, there we go.
With you there.
Yay!
All right. So these are your dates, 17th and 18th of November. Sorry, I should have kept scrolling there, everybody. But it also has the Zoom links as well. But this is the annual provider training. This happens every year with all of Medicaid, so DHS and then the managed care organizations, and allows for providers to ask questions of, you know, things they're experiencing and try to get those answered from all those individual parties. The last one I wanted to touch on was 2184, which is CMP grants for in-person visitation aids during COVID-19. This is a little bit different than the communicative technology one, because this is almost talking about like visitation aids. So we're talking like physical dividers to aid in like in-person visits or to help with that. But these funds are open as well for providers to be able to submit a lot of the same criteria. As you'll see, this is a four-page informational letter, this would be a good aid for you to determine whether or not you would qualify for those funds as well. Again, they'll accept grant applications through January 23rd, 2021, or at the end of the public health emergency, whichever is later. So you'll be able to submit for those to help with in-person visitation during this time. Because obviously, I think we can all agree that if it can be safely done, visitation between residents or tenants and their family helps with mental health as well. So as long as we can continue to safely do that, I think this would help aid in some of the safety measures to help make that happen. So that's really what I wanted to cover as far as informational letters go. Again, make sure that I'm on the right screen here. So, Jeannie, was Hillary able to join us?
I believe so.
Awesome. Hillary,
are you on the line? Might be double muted. Everybody seems, you know, we need that bingo game with that double muted.
I'm here. Yes, awesome. I was double muted.
I love it.
Thanks, Hillary.
Sorry. Every time that messes me up.
So, Jeannie, I'll start by just kind of offering you guys the opportunity to maybe just give a summary of what you've seen or what's happened over the last month, if you have anything from Iowa Total Care's perspective that you'd like to share with the group.
Okay, thanks, Brandon. Well, thank you for, again, another opportunity to share our insights and updates with you and your association. As always, please remember to look at our configuration file. We have lots of exciting news and updates that are occurring. We've got a lot of projects that are going to be coming to a close this month. So, and it will affect your folks as well. We have a lot of HCBS claims that are going to be processing through that began this week and through the next week or so. Please look forward to, I know there's a lot of folks out there with aged claims, and we have identified opportunities for those payments. And of course, there is always fallout. I will just put that caveat out there that we will do a sweep once the large projects then complete. So our HCBS projects are going through at this time. Some of you may have seen some of those payments already coming through this week. So that's it. So you want to jump to the questions that we have?
Yeah, let's do that. Obviously, one that we've had over the last couple of months worth of calls has been in regards to the COVID relief rate. And it's been, I don't know, I'll use the word difficult for providers to understand how to properly submit these claims. Because I think the concern is, you know, we can submit this multiple different ways. We'd prefer to have one known way to submit the claims, you know, maybe a written way of how to submit the claims, just to ensure that later on when these claims are being reviewed, there's no kind of take back that happens or anything like that, because, you know, we have enough billing problems when we're submitting claims. I know since back in 2016, where we've submitted claims a certain way and are having them recoup now because of reasons that we don't necessarily agree with. So I guess what we're looking for is some kind of written guidance that we can reach out to, we can reference that says, this is how we're supposed to do this. And then in 2 years, we can continue to have that piece of guidance that says, this is how we were told to do this. And that's kind of what we're looking for. I know that we talked earlier this week, Jeannie, about with a little bit of guidance from you guys on this COVID relief rate. So if we could maybe discuss that, that would be great.
Okay. Ms. Hillary.
Sure. so this is Hillary. So on the COVID relief payments, I think we mentioned before they have to include the DR condition code on the claim. Because that condition code applies to the whole claim on a UV, those COVID days have to be submitted on a separate claim from your normal room and board claim. So for example, say you have someone who say from the 1st through the 5th, they're just normal room and board. Then they get tested for COVID on the 6th. So you would start billing that COVID DR condition code on a new claim from the 6th until either the test comes back negative, or until they test that they no longer have COVID if they get a positive test result. You could end up with 3 claims per month or in a month, because you have to bill that DR condition code claim separately from your normal room and board or your regular room and board days. Does that part make sense?
That part does make, that's for current month claims, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Or I guess our current billing cycle claims.
Correct. Are you talking also about going back and correcting the claim since the policy was backdated, I guess?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So on those, you would have to submit corrected claims where you would adjust the dates, basically. So there would be, you would still have to cut it off on the date before the COVID days started. So if you submitted a claim for an entire month, you might have to go back and correct that claim to be the 1st through the 5th, for example, and then you have a new COVID claim. We will waive timely filing on those. And then you would have another claim for the final days of the month. That's the only way that our system can pick up that DR code without applying it to the entire month, is if it's separated out like that. So I know that's a little bit more extra work on your side. But that's the only way we can differentiate those days, because that condition code applies to the whole claim.
And
there
so
questions on
our- yeah, I guess I just have a couple quick, and I can pull up the chat as well. But so when we're submitting for those COVID days, we'll be paid for our normal room and board rate plus the COVID relief rate amount of 300 on those claims. So
correct.
We need to do something different with what the amounts that we're billing for those days.
Yes. So you do have to inflate the amount that you're billing to include that $300 additional, because we still have lesser of set up in the system. So if you don't bill your normal rate plus $300 per day, it will still default to lesser of on those claims. So you just need to make sure that your billed charges are enough to cover that full amount.
And then aside from needing to include the DR code on the claim, and if we were, obviously, if we're doing retroactive stuff, we'd need to do a 217 corrected claim. Right. Aside from those two differences, does everything else on the claim look the same as a normal room and board claim?
It does look like a normal room and board claim. We did ask that you include some COVID diagnosis on the COVID days. It can be in the second position or anywhere on the claim, just so if we go back and review, it shows that they were being tested for COVID or had some COVID related issue. So if you just add that diagnosis code after the normal one, that will work just fine.
That very good point. Yes, I should have mentioned that as well. So the DR, the corrected claim code, which you would normally do for any corrected claim, and the COVID-19 diagnosis on there.
Correct.
All right, so I'm going to look at the chat here and see if there's anything on that topic before we move away from that. These are home health. So I guess one of the questions is that guidance written anywhere, or could it be written anywhere for the COVID relief rate and how the provider should be submitting that?
We did answer questions to the IME that I thought was included in a Q&A that they had out there, but I tried to find it the other day and was not successful. So I think we can definitely look into putting it in writing so that you have the guidance as well. Jeannie, I'm not sure if we would have to get that approved by IME before we send it over, or how we could do that, but I will let Jeannie or Tony speak to it.
Historically, we have never indicated how to bill specific services, we always refer back to the IME. So we would still follow the same protocol, Hillary, and it would be sent to, because it should be submitted basically the same way. So those Q&As will probably need to be updated. You know, we could send that information to IME, but historically we do not put billing information in writing because we don't have all of the information at hand for each situation. And so it would be difficult for us to be able, you know, we don't do a one-off on that. So in a situation with COVID, we would partner with IME in getting that information updated with their information that they send out to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, whatever we can do, I suppose, to help. I think this is going to be different than probably how America.
I'm sorry, I cannot hear if somebody's speaking.
Can you hear me right now?
You sound like you're in a tunnel, Brandon.
Yep.
Well, great. Maybe I'll get closer to my screen. So. Trying to think. Oh, so sorry. With that guidance, if there's any way that we can try to, I think this will differ from how Amerigroup is issuing guidance, or at least the process. So if we'll just need to work with the department, I think, to ensure that we have clear instructions from each of the MCOs on how they want this to be submitted. So we can work with IME on that. To get that going.
And then what we'll do, Hillary, I'm not sure how that works because I'm not part of the claims area where Hillary is, but Hillary and I can work together to figure out how to get that information to IME, what that process is.
Okay, that'd be great. This one's on the little bit more on the technical side, I suppose, but when we're breaking up those days in a month for the COVID relief rate. Obviously, especially if it occurs early in the month, the patient liability or the client participation amount would possibly span for those first, say, in your example, those first 5 days, Hillary, and then would need to be continued to be removed out of the COVID days more than likely. I think that's kind of part of my second question is there's been some hiccups with the patient liability on claims currently, on normal claims with Iowa Total Care and how that's going to flow with the COVID relief rate claims.
Right. So the client participation setup should be completely corrected now. I know we are still working on reprocessing a bunch of those claims for the client participation. We had a little hiccup with our database that we used to validate the client participation when we were pulling the project. So we have now fixed that and are just doing the final review of it. But it is possible if those COVID days are in the beginning of the month that it would come off of some of those COVID room and board days. I'm not sure how we could stop it because it will automatically look for that member and what their liability is other than manually processing them. And we know there's, you know, errors with that can happen. So it is possible that it would end up coming out of those days, but then it would just go up to whatever the total of their liability is for that month. And then it would, the rest of the days would be paid in full.
Right. And I mean, that's how we would want it to yeah. flow is, you know, obviously the first 5 days, if it's all of it, then that's fine. If there's a remainder that would take out of the COVID relief, I guess we just want to make sure that it's being taken out of the claims that it needs to in the correct order, right. I guess.
Yeah, it would flow over. If there's two different claims, it would flow over to the following claim submission. We have it set up in our system where it calculates how much has been paid, like on the first claim, and then it would just flow over into the second claim if there was more than one.
Okay. And we do have someone on this call that says that they have submitted claims separately for the DR code. And they were still denied. So I don't know if this process, if having that code on there requires some manual processing or if this the process that we have laid out here is a new adoption. Do you have any thoughts as to why someone who maybe did submit this way would have that?
Yeah, so I think initially we had some setup issues when we tried to automate this process. Those have been fixed, so you shouldn't be seeing those errors going forward. We do have people going back to review those claims as well to make sure that we get those COVID days paid out correctly. So if you are seeing inaccurate denial, we are reviewing those since the system was updated and we caught that error.
Okay.
So you should be seeing those start to pay out this month and possibly into December, but they should start paying this month.
And this kind of goes with my comments earlier about seeking some kind of written guidance, and it's asking to please release a document or memo in which you could provide written instruction and possibly some UB04 examples of how to bill these COVID relief rate claims. Verbal instructions are helpful, definitely, but something in writing to refer to later, like I mentioned earlier, would be the ideal method for this, I think.
Right.
Just for insurance, I guess, later on is the part of the concern. So, and I don't know that it's necessarily because of past experiences with Iowa Total Care, but it's probably just past experiences in general and wanting to make sure that we're covered, I suppose.
Right. We definitely understand that. We just have to follow the process with the state. So we'll work with the state and send over what we can so they have that guidance in the Q&A section.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm continuing to flip through. One question with the corrected claims. Does the corrected claim need to have the original claim number identified on it?
So they do ask that the original claim number be identified on those corrected claims, just so that we can tie the two together easily and make sure it's accurate in the system. So they do ask that you put that original claim number on the claim.
Great. And then this next one is, how will the MCO know timely filing if they have to adjust the claim and the non-COVID days won't have the DR code on them? So I think I can maybe try to summarize this.
Yeah.
You probably understand, but I guess in case anyone else doesn't know, if you're submitting a claim, a corrected claim for the first 5 days, which won't have the DR code, 6 through 15 has the DR code, and then the remaining don't, how does Iowa Total Care know that 1st through the 5th and the 16th through the 30th are part of this disaster-related billing change?
So we have an exception set up for the room and board in general, just so that we make sure that it doesn't deny for timely filing. So we shouldn't run into that issue at all on these claims, whether it has the DR or not, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. So I'm reading through, and I think you already talked about our client participation question, Hillary, with an update on where that's going. So we do have some questions in here regarding client participation. Talking about IME's process on billing scenarios and claim issues, they have numerous claim issues with claims being reprocessed under the projects for client participation errors. They sent these to their rep and haven't gotten any action, including the CP amount being allocated to CO45 disallowance, as well as CP creating underpayments. Is this something that you're aware of, Hillary, as being a problem?
I have seen some of this, yes, and that's part of the review we're doing right now for both underpayments and overpayments with relation to client participation, how it was calculated. So we are reviewing both of those, and we will submit once we validate the client participation, which they're working on right now, we'll submit both of those projects. If it is a recovery or a recruitment, they will send out that normal letter. And then there's 30 days to dispute and 60 days before the recoupments or recovery start. And of course, you can send a check in prior to that if you agree with what you see on that letter.
Thanks, Hillary. I do know that this client participation thing in the projects has been pretty significant for some providers. I know of one provider where it's they have about 600 claims that have been affected by this, creating underpayments in a lot of situations where it's being taken out twice, once for the actual client participation and then once out of the billed amount of the claim or the paid amount of the claim. So, I know that you're saying that I think you have it fixed, but I don't know if we need to connect this provider possibly with you, and I'm sure that there's several others, but because of the volume, to help get this, I guess, vetted and fixed, I suppose, or ensure that it's fixed.
Can I ask a quick question with regards to that? Did the provider send a check-in for the recovery, or because we have seen in some situations where the posting of the check happens after the 60 days, and so the system starts recouping the money automatically at that 60-day point if there's no dispute, because it can't see that check yet. So I'm just wondering if they sent in a check.
I would have to let Nicole or Laura probably speak to that as far as their how they have done. Oh, separate issue, they're telling me.
Okay. yeah, if they could work through their provider rep and they can send it to me, and we'll take a look at it and get you an answer back on that. And obviously, if it's an underpayment, we'll get your payments out to you via project. Okay. So we can take a look at that.
I think they are underpayments because the CP is being taken out twice. So.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I will be going back up to the top of the chat because I know we had some home health related questions in here as well. This first one is about the L6 denial code dating back to December of 19. And they've tried to work with their rep on this. How can we get old claims paid once and for all is the question.
So we do have a final L6 project going in. We had to do a little bit of extra review on it because of the file load switch that I think we talked about in the last meeting where we started doing we had a third party go back and validate third party liability, as well as we had an exception fix for a lot of the codes you guys are all billing. So we are doing that final sweep on the L6 to get these hopefully paid once and for all. If you want to shoot those 11 claims over to your rep, we can triple check that they're included, but they should be picked up in that project, which should go in next week. So I would expect the payments to start by the end of the month and go into December.
So Heather, copy me on that if there's no PHI, I guess, and I can help you follow up, I suppose. Another one, it looks like, where it's talking about the code G0299, which I'm pretty sure is either LPN or it's RN, denying because it didn't have a terminal illness associated with it, which would not be a requirement for a home health claim. Because 299 is not specific to hospice or home health. So what would be the best approach for them to get this fixed as well?
So we did find an error where that code was listed as hospice specific in one of our benefits, and we did remove that benefit or that requirement. So there is a project, it's still in configuration, so that project probably won't go in until the end of the month, but that will be corrected in a project as soon as that configuration is complete.
Awesome. This next question is a home health, but it's asking about the DR, the disaster related condition code. So home health was granted some assistance as well, not necessarily in by form of like a relief rate, but because they are able to bill for services that through telehealth that they maybe hadn't been able to in the past. Are they able to just put the DR code on at the claim level and then bill as normal for the month?
Yes. Yep. It should pick that up automatically.
Awesome. Okay, we'll keep flipping through the chat here. So I do see that question that I was talking about with the double CP. Do they need to do a spreadsheet to their provider rep? This is, I think, a different provider than who I had spoken to before on this, but how should they work through double client participation deductions? Should they do a spreadsheet, or how should they flow with that?
I think it would be helpful if you could provide at least the claim number to your rep so that we can pinpoint those without pricing all of them and looking at client participation for all of them. I think that would be very helpful. We are reviewing them anyway, but we just want to make sure that we pick those up. So if you can do that, that would be great. It's not a requirement, but it would be helpful.
Okay, awesome. So I have a comment from, I think, one of our home health agencies about a sweep completed in May, June, and July and adjusted some 2019 claims to pay corrected LUPA rates that had been initially paid at a lower rate. On Monday, they received a request for take back due to several overpayments on these claims. I'm thinking others will receive this. Please look over it closely because 90% of the overpayment requests are incorrect. So, is Iowa Total Care aware of a letter that's gone out requesting funds back on for LUPA rate differences that maybe is an incorrect rate letter or incorrect recoupment letter?
I am not aware of that, but we do have several teams that work on or that submit recoveries. Some of them come from a corporate team, and we will go back and review that and make sure we pull it back, and we'll let your reps know so they can reach out to you. If you have that project number, which is usually on the letter they send out, if you could send that to your rep so that we can make sure we're looking at the right one, that would be great.
Thanks, Hillary. And I do know we've been getting recoupment letters from both MCOs here just within the last, I would say, week and a half probably, specifically. So I have not seen the recoupment letters from the Iowa Total Care projects at this point, though.
Okay, we can go back based on that information and look at those recent projects and take a look at those specifically.
Thank you. This is a question again on CP with our client participation with nursing facilities. How will providers know when a project is actually completed? So that way they know when they should be reaching out and when they shouldn't be, because it may be ongoing.
So we are working on a process to make sure that your provider reps know when those projects close. So when they're officially closed, that means all the claims have been adjusted. So if you have an issue after that point, then you could reach out with that information. But we will be, or we are working on a process to make sure that the provider relations reps are aware when they close so that they can get that information over to you. Jeannie, do you have anything else on that? Or Tony?
As far as what? I guess I'm not understanding.
Oh, just the new process where we're working on letting you guys know when the project's close and the PR reps reaching out and letting providers know.
Yeah. If we know that, you know, they're actively working with providers and they know that they're wrapped up in that project, they use that as a reference to utilize as a research tool. But at this point, as projects close, we don't know all of the providers that are included in the project. So it's not a situation where they, once one closes, they know who to, you know, they don't just reach out to providers. Is that what you're asking, Hillary?
Yeah, I guess we're working on the process to shore that up so that you guys are aware of who's in it and what's, when the project's closed. So I didn't want to speak for PR as far as reaching out once they have that information.
Yeah, I guess it's no problem. So, you know, it's a new process that's being developed at this time. So I wouldn't commit to anything at this point until we understand the project, how it works and how we're all that. So, but that is great news. We normally probably with that type of information, we would use that as a reference tool. And if we find that those claims are in there, then we can update the providers as necessary. So that's about where I'm at until we know more about the updates, how that's going to work.
Thank you.
It's still a work in progress. So we don't have it completely ironed out, but we are working on making sure that provider relations gets that information. So.
Great. This is another home health question, and they said that they've been receiving more and more denials asking for the claim to be billed to another health insurance, which is Medicare, or usually Medicare, but possibly a Medicare Advantage plan. And obviously on home health claims, these providers are submitting XB, which is not homebound, in box 80 for Iowa Total Care. To bypass the need for that Medicare EOB or denial. When reaching out to claims, they say that they're not aware of this process. And they've sent spreadsheets to their provider rep. So I guess one, if this is becoming increasingly, does there need to be a retrain, I suppose, on claims to ensure that providers aren't receiving this denial in error, as it sounds like they maybe are?
Yes, we did recently discover that the XD wasn't set up in our pre-adjudication edits from implementation. And so we are working to get that updated and put into the rules so that they don't get that denial. In the interim, though, we have come up with an interim solution to hopefully not have that denial hit anymore. We are working on correcting that, and we are also doing education with the claims team to make sure that that doesn't go out incorrectly as well. So I believe because it's a pre-adjudication edit that fix probably won't go in until the beginning of the year. But I think our interim processes will help pick that up, and we'll get those claims reprocessed in that L6 project as well.
And then, so this provider specifically has said that they've sent a spreadsheet to their rep without having received a response. What's the best route for them? Can they send spreadsheets to providerrelations@iowatotalcare.com, or what should they be doing with their claims that are denying inappropriately?
Brandon, yeah, they can send spreadsheets to their representative, but we actually will upload that information into a SharePoint where our claims folks go in and do the research. Once we receive that information, they will do a once over, you know, to determine is it information that they can respond back to the providers. If it isn't, then they submit the information into our SharePoint. And on average, it takes 30 days for that to be researched. And then if it's going to be included in a project, for example, then, you know, it could be longer than that to actually, you know, then for it to adjudicate. So the best information that if we do have identified projects that it would be in would be to review our configuration file on the website. Once the information is received that and they submit it onto the SharePoint, I would believe that it would be my expectation that the provider rep then would respond with the information, letting them know it has been, you know, submitted to our claims folks, and you can expect, you know, at least minimally, you know, at about 30 days for that to take for research and then project to follow.
Thanks, Jeannie. This next one, ITCs reprocess all HCBS Home Health S5130 claims, paying at a higher rate from 4120 forward. Is there an updated fee schedule, I guess, for this service? I think the S5130 is Homemaker for them. For some reason, I feel like I've heard some questions from providers on this where is the Homemaker rate being applied? Because there's like a monthly maximum, I felt like, for this. Do you know of any issues?
I haven't seen any issues come through with that code specifically. We can definitely look into it further. I do know that we have it set up as the to pay lesser of, so it shouldn't be paying over billed charges for sure. But we can take that back and look into the configuration on that code specifically and reach back out to you with that information.
Yeah, that would be great. I do recall seeing something or hearing something like that where it may have been, you know, taking a different part of the Iowa code and applying a rate that was different than what it should have been. I'm trying to find it now, but I'll keep looking.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take that one back, and I should have an answer for you by the end of the week.
Okay. For home health DR condition code claims, do we also need to adjust our charges like hospice room and board claims? If so, what is the increase in which we should adjust our charges? I don't know that there's, my understanding is I don't know that there was a rate change for the home health DR condition code claims. I think it was the same. It was more so allowing those to be performed via telehealth. Would that be accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. So you would just leave the bill charges the same. It's just allowing you to do those telehealth visits.
Okay. We receive recruitment letters as well. Who is our provider rep? It definitely depends on where you are located in Iowa. I will see if I can maybe pull up Iowa Total Care's website here quick and show everyone how to get there quick. All right, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Perfect. So,
familiar.
Yeah, you guys have probably seen this before.
Just a few times.
For providers. And then you will click on provider resources. And you will look at provider relations territory map. And then here you will see, depending on your county, who your assigned provider rep is. And there are two pages, so this would be your initial contact on this sheet. And then this would be more of a general type contact sheet. So I'll just leave that up.
So, hey, Brandon.
Go ahead.
It triggered a thought here when you said the Homemaker services. I just want to make sure that anyone who provides attendant care services, Homemaker services, that would be S5125, S5130, S5131, to make sure that you are all set up and ready to go for EVV beginning January 1st. CareBridge is the vendor that is working to secure all the information for Amerigroup and Iowa Total Care. There have been ongoing trainings and such. There's been numerous ILs sent out by IME. So just wanting to make sure that everyone is up and ready for the services beginning January 1st, 2021. for EVV.
Thanks, Jeannie. You're welcome. I mean, anyone who bills any of those services would be subject to EVV requirements. So we'll make sure that the municipal is to anyone, like I said, anyone who bills those codes would be subject to EVV. So we did send out a survey to our membership just to ensure that everyone is aware that these changes are happening. 1/1/21 is the effective date of those changes, where claims need to be, for those four codes, need to be submitted through the EVV solution, CareBridge, or with your third-party vendor who is in a partnership with CareBridge, and that is fully executed by 1/1/21 in order for those claims to be processed properly and not denied. So great point in bringing that up, Jeannie.
Of course. Just want everyone to be prepared, not surprised.
Absolutely. And there have been trainings on, there are trainings all over CareBridge's website, which I know that we've run in our bulletin over the past several months, and we'll be running again today with some additional information on where to get that through CareBridge. With this next question is about providers, are the provider relations acknowledging that they've received something from a provider, so that way they know that they've received it and are hopefully working on it. Any comment on that, Jeannie?
I think I covered that a little bit ago as far as sending in those spreadsheets and such. So folks, when you send those in, when we forward those on, the representatives have been advised to ensure to let you know that they have forwarded those on. Please allow enough time for us to complete that research and the project to follow.
Thanks, Jeannie. This next one is a pretty good point. If there's projects that are still open for a known system problem, and we're receiving recoupments as well on those known system problems, should there be like a checks and balances on letters, submissions, or letter being sent out and verified that there's not an active project working against those?
So we do try to validate that information. Like I mentioned earlier, there's a corporate team that also submits recoupments in particular. So sometimes we miss those or we don't get that information in time before they send the letters out. If there are issues when a recoupment letter is being or has been sent out, please let your provider relations rep know so that we can take a look at those projects. Because like I mentioned, we don't always see the claims before you guys get the letters. So I think we are working more with our corporate team to try to resolve that issue. But I know that it has been an issue in the past, and until we get that process worked out, I think it may continue to be an issue for a little while. So if you are seeing that, please let your provider relations rep know so that we can make sure we take a look at those recoupments and stop them from going out.
Thanks, Hillary. Just had a question. I see EVV is for S5130, correct? And it is for S5130, S5125, like Jeannie had mentioned earlier, S5131, and T1019. So I would also encourage providers to be looking at the DHS EVV webpage. There's lots of information on EVV there, trainings. Honestly, all you need to do is Google Iowa Medicaid EVV, and that's pretty much the first link that shows up for you. But you could look there. It also has links to CareBridge's resources and their training documents as well on how to complete that, and then their contact information. Okay, so this is talking about CareBridge as well. When providers bill, they're not allowed to bill a higher rate than what Iowa Total Care pays. So if rates change, or if they're increased, I guess more specifically, CareBridge is stating that they will not have to do that, and that ITC will automatically review all claims and pay us the difference. Does that sound appropriate or accurate?
No, it does not. I would submit that question into your provider representative. They have an internal source that they can send that information to have those questions asked, and that liaison will work with our the folks at CareBridge and then get an answer back to you. Yeah, no, that doesn't sound correct.
So definitely send that, Heather. They've been working, this is another provider who's been working in CareBridge since June and billed all October services S5130 through the EVV system. They all came back as $0 paid. Will their provider relations specialist be able to assist with reprocessing? They've been unable to resubmit claims through EVV.
Hillary, wasn't there an edit that went into effect prior to when it was supposed to with EVV?
So there was a there was an edit that went into effect. It's a soft edit, so it was more of a warning, letting providers know that coming January 1st, this will turn into a denial if you don't use the EVV system. But in this case, it sounds like they did use it. I am not sure how you would do a corrected claim or a reconsideration with this EVV system. I think we're going to have to take that back to CareBridge and see what the process is for that. Because I'm not sure just yet how that's going to work.
And I would encourage, you know, if you're a provider who is working through the EVV solution right now, I would take any of your outstanding questions. I mean, you can send them to me and I can try to vet some of those, because chances are if you have them, other people have them too. And especially with the varying levels of in which people are in this system, some are like Mary, who has started this in June and billed in October. And then we have others who probably haven't even submitted a claim yet. So I would take any of your questions. Obviously, I think you definitely submit them to CareBridge for sure. But if I could be copied, or if you could send them to me separately, I'd love to help track those down for you as well, to help aid in making this transition even just a little bit smoother. I would do that. So.
Yeah, Brendan, I echo your remarks because right now those are the folks that were our pilot providers, and this is what they need to know. And this is perfect information to share with them and get resolution prior to a go live for everyone.
Awesome. They've been working. So this is that same person. They worked with the ITC person who was working with CareBridge, and he indicated we would not have to resubmit claims if the rates changed.
So I don't know this for sure, but I think if you worked through EVV on the original claim and had that verification, that we should be able to reprocess them without going back through CareBridge if the rates were to go up. We'll verify that, of course, but I think the main thing is that the original claim went through that EVV system so that it was a verified visit, but we'll double check on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Sue makes a good point because most of these four services, to date, haven't seen rate changes for a while. Not that it's not something we're working on behalf of members, is to help with some of that. But it's going to be a bigger problem when all the home health services come into play and the LUPA rates do see fluctuations more regularly, that this would be probably more of a problem, I suppose. So thanks for your comment as well, Heather, talking about the resubmit claim process not existing. I think we finally made it through the questions. Lots of great questions, honestly. I think some takeaways are going to be if we could get some guidance on the COVID relief rate or work with you guys and the department on issuing some guidance, that would be especially helpful. I know that you talked about follow-up with provider relations specialists when projects are complete. If there's any way I could be looped into that as well, I would appreciate that, especially for communication out to members when projects are complete that directly impact their claims processing. And then we'll work with you on getting some examples on how to improve the client participation problem that is being experienced by several members where CP has been deducted a couple times. So that's kind of my 30-second summary, I suppose, as to what we're going to try to take away from this call to help improve the process going forward. Does that sound accurate?
Correct. Yep.
Awesome. Well, we have run out of time. I appreciate both you, Hillary, and Jeannie for joining us today and helping to answer some of our questions. We'll work with you all to try to continue to improve the system and continue to move towards 2021 better than we are today. So thank you both for joining us, and we will be starting our Amerigroup call here very shortly. So thank you.
Thanks, Brent.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.